Welcome to Everyone Loves Guitar, where we sit down and talk with interesting professional guitar players and other musicians, uncover their life stories, and discover what makes them tick. If you love guitar, music, and the backstory of people's lives, then stick around. You're in the right place. Hey guys, this is Craig. I want to wish you and your family a very happy and healthy holiday season. We're going to be taking it easy pretty much the last 2 weeks of the year so I can catch up on some other projects I'm working on and so I can spend some time with my family. We'll be dropping shows on Tuesday and Thursday between now and the remainder of the year, but we'll be back up to a full schedule with some really awesome guests in 2021 right after the new year. I have some thank yous that I'd like to drop before we get to today's show. First, I want to thank you very much for listening. I appreciate that somehow I could put out some good vibes and people seem to be enjoying them, and that means a lot to me. In 2020, we doubled in size on downloads, and we almost tripled in terms of our YouTube viewership, and I'm very grateful for this and thank you. If you are someone who supported the show, either financially, or if you took the time to send us an email or engage with us on social media, I want to thank you very much for all your time and energy in doing this. Again, I sincerely appreciate your support, your good vibes, and all your loyalty. You know, I know there's a lot of choices out there, and I appreciate you including Everyone Loves Guitar as one of your choices, so thanks. I guess in general, I'm glad you're all getting something out of the show, and if you laugh and have as much fun as I do while I'm making the shows, then you're going to have a great day because we have so much fun when I'm on there. People often ask how they can support the show, and honestly, subscribing to the podcast and to the YouTube channel and sharing the show on social media channels or telling as many friends as you can about it, that's honestly the best thing you can do to support it. If you do want to support the show financially, as many have done, just go to everyonelovesguitar.com/support. Whatever you're doing, we really appreciate it. And lastly, I just want to thank all the wonderful guests who've spent countless hours with me. I mean, more generous than I can ever imagine, sharing their journey, opening up in ways I'd never have expected. Not only do I appreciate all your kindness and energy, but I've learned so much more from all of you than I ever would have anticipated or that I could ever give back to anybody else. And on that note, I just want to close out by saying happy holidays, happy new year, love your children, be nice to each other, and make sure you choose to be happy. It doesn't cost you a dime. If you're enjoying this show and you'd like to support it, go to everyonelovesguitar.com/support. And for information on advertising, visit everyonelovesguitar.com/advertise. Hey, everybody, this is Craig Garber from Everyone Loves Guitar. And we have a really interesting guest today, but I want to tell you like a little backstory. So, I don't know, 6 to 8 weeks ago, I'm driving to the gym. I think it was like a Sunday. And I'm just making a left turn to go into the mall and the gym there. And I get a random thought and I said, "And I wonder if I should have a singer on the show. I think I need to have a singer on the show. I mean, listen, it's Everyone Loves Guitar, but you know, I like to mix it up once in a while." So I said, "Man, I don't know any singers. I don't know. I got to figure this out." And then, you know, I went on my day, went to the gym, did my workout, whatever. The next day, Monday, I get a call from a buddy of mine, Doug Bossy, who I interviewed here quite a long time ago. And it's a great 2-part interview. If you haven't heard it, it's Doug Bossy, B-O-S-S-I. He's a great guy. We became friends and he's a brilliant guitarist, very smart business person. And he goes, "Hey, Craig," he goes, "I want you to interview a buddy of mine." I said, "Okay." He goes, "His name is Robbie Wyckoff and he's a singer." I'm like, "This is really weird, Doug." And he says, "Why?" I tell him why. And he goes, "Okay, so let me tell you about the guy." He goes, he's currently out on tour with Pablo Cruz." I said, "You are shitting me." He goes, "No, why?" I said, "I know who the guy is." He goes, "How do you know?" I said, he's very young looking. I said, "He's got long hair." He goes, "Yeah." He goes, "How do you know who he is?" I said, "I saw Pablo Cruz in concert 3 weeks ago. They came down here to Tampa. I saw them at Ruth Eckert Hall. They opened up for Little River Band, and I had interviewed Rich Herring, the lead guitar player for Little River Band, and he was kind enough to give Ann and I a couple of tickets to come see the show. And I saw Pablo Cruz open. I was a big Pablo Cruz fan as a kid, and I saw their lead singer, and he kicked ass. He did a great job." And he goes, "You're kidding me." I was like, "No, that's so weird." Anyway, so he hooked me up with Robbie and we got we first connected a long time ago, and here we are today. So we got the incredible Robbie Wyckoff with us. He's a great voice, and he's a really cool guy. We spent some time talking. He's a highly sought after LA session vocalist and recording artist whose his voice can be heard on numerous films, television shows, hit records, and national jingles. He's recorded and performed with artists such as Roger Waters. Roger chose Robbie to be the lead singer on the Wall live tour from 2010 to 2013. So that's an honor of the highest, caliber. And he's also recorded with Diana Ross, Barbara Streisand, or as I call her, Babs, Celine Dion, Natalie Cole, Clint Black, Sheena Easton, Rick Springfield, Keith Emerson from Emerson, Lake & Palmer, Michael McDonald from the Doobie Brothers, Jackson Brown, and Greg Rawley, the keyboard player from Journey and Santana. He's also played with Eddie Vedder, Stephen Bishop, and Dionne Warwick. The cards don't lie. Robbie's released two solo albums, and his film and television credits include vocals on Shrek, the animated TV series Phineas and Ferb, The Emperor's New School, The Replacements, the vocals on Everybody Loves Raymond, Yes, Dear, and Seventh Heaven. He's also, again, he was handpicked by Roger Waters to be the lead singer on The Wall. And today, which is the day this drops, is Robbie and Mrs. Wyckoff's anniversary. So happy anniversary, man. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Greg, thanks so much for having me, man.
I appreciate it.
What an honor to be the first singer.
Yeah. But it's how weird is that? Like, how many, like, unlikely, isn't that nutty? It's like, it's kind of it's almost like the universe is saying, hey, let's have some fun here, So thank you so much. And I'm glad you're on the show. Glad we got to connect.
I'm so glad Doug referred me to you. You know, he's a good friend and, as you know, a wonderful, amazing, talented guitar player.
Very much so. Great guy. Hey, yeah, so you grew up in Michigan. Yes. Shout out to Doug Bossy. Thank you very much, Doug. You grew up in Michigan, and in the early 80s, you moved out to LA. What prompted you to move out there, and what were you doing career-wise at that time right before you left in Michigan?
Well, career-wise, I was really not doing much at all. I was playing in my original band called Lyric, and we were doing some gigs around northern Michigan. But basically, I was selling shoes at Tom McCann Shoes at the mall.
Awesome.
I was playing in my band with Lyric, and I had a girlfriend at the time, and everything kind of came to a head. I knew that, I read this book called The Platinum Rainbow, and it was about, choosing a career in the music business that my brother-in-law got me. And I remember towards the end of the book, it said, if you really want to get serious about your career, you need to relocate to Los Angeles or New York. And of course, I had enough of the snow in northern Michigan. So of course, I thought of, eventually, I need to get out and get the courage to pack up and leave. So at the time, what had happened, my mother passed away in 1982, the night before my 17th birthday.
Wow, sorry about that.
Oh, thanks. So she had passed away, and I at the time, it was like shortly after my mom passed away, my band broke up. Then my girlfriend ended up cheating on me, so I broke up with her, right?
Bitch.
Yeah, bitch. And I was kind of...
Ha-ha, who's laughing now?
Well, I got a funny story behind that.
Yeah, man, let's hear that shit.
So that's actually not too funny. It's kind of sad. But, and then at the time, I was just sick of selling shoes, and it's like, here's my chance. I'm like, band broke up, girlfriend broke up, nothing was really keeping me in Michigan anymore, in Traverse City, which is where I grew up. And I knew it, man. I had to get serious about my career. I said, this is my shot. I just threw what I could, packed up my car and threw everything else away, packed up, and I drove out with a friend of mine. And one of the best moves I ever made. But back to my girlfriend at the time.
Yeah, that's right. Do you want to name her? Do you want to name her on the show?
Sure. Tammy Pazny.
Tammy Pazny. Ha ha. Awesome. He's a famous singer in LA now. He's been around the world several times, Tammy.
Oh, man. No, she was great. She was a little hottie. I did these, Miss America scholarship pageants, right? Her mother was like in charge of these Miss America scholarship pageants. And she was always like in the beauty pageants, right? Cause she was beautiful girl, young. And, so I'm here I am during the swimsuit competition singing, lady, whatever song, you know. And so I'm doing these Miss America scholarship pageants. Long story short, we move in together. I eventually get a roommate to move in with me, a friend from high school. I'm doing gigs with my band Lyric. And as I'm going off to my gig, I forgot where it was, somewhere downstate in Michigan. In the back of my mind, I thought, wow, can I really trust my friend and my girlfriend at home while I'm out? You know, it's going to be gone for a couple nights. I thought, I just had a really weird feeling about it. So after we did our gig, came back, I think a couple nights later, and my neighbor came down and told me, basically, yeah, she's been cheating on you with your roommate.
Dude. Oh.
So, okay, this is turning in much longer. So basically, I broke up with her. I said, okay, I'm moving to L.A., you know, and she didn't believe me. She's, yeah, like, whatever, whatever, whatever. So the day came, we broke up, she moved out, kicked my roommate out, packed my shit up, got in my car, and she was in beauty school, wanted to be a beautician. So I said, well, I better say goodbye to her one last time. So I pulled up to her class, walked into a room, got her out of class, and she's like shocked. She's like, what are you doing here pulling me out of class? I said, well, I'm leaving to LA. She goes, what are you talking about? I said, remember I told you I'm moving to Los Angeles? She's like, yeah, yeah. She goes, yeah. I said, well, I'm leaving. She's like, when? I said, now. I said, my car's packed up. I just wanted to say goodbye one last time. She's freaked out. She's, her eyes got huge and went, what? So I gave her a hug. And as I'm walking out, she just burst into tears and started crying. And I get into my car with my friend, and she's running after my car going, no, no, don't leave. And I get in the car and I put it in gear and I drove away, and she's running after my car going, hey, wait, stop. And I never saw again. So I took off. I drove, and as I looked at her in the rearview mirror, running after my car, bawling her eyes out, I turned on the radio, and it was that the Billy Joel song. I don't care what you say, all this is my life. Go ahead with your life. Leave me alone.
Wow. So you know what, man? What a cool guy you were. Which shows what a nice guy you were, that she cheated bad, on you. And then you don't feel bad. If you looked at her on Facebook, I guarantee she's 300 pounds. I'm serious, man. All these girls I was like afraid to talk to in high school.
Oh,
so the universe has not cooperated with them.
But anyway.
Wow. No, that shows what a cool guy you were, man. Honestly.
There's a song there, right?
There is a song there, man. There is a song there. And that's awesome. But let me ask you this. Really took a lot of balls to do that.
I know
in a sense, maybe it was like all the bad shit was happening, so it was like refreshing just to get out of Dodge.
Yeah, it was.
And definitely, that might have given you a little bit of courage. But that I really give you credit for that. That's not an easy thing to do at 17.
Actually, I was 21 at the time when I moved. Okay. So
but
from
still,
the time my mom passed away, there's been quite a few years there. And also to let you know that once my mom had passed away, my brother had already moved out to Los Angeles. So he went out with a friend of his. So I had visited him twice. And it's because of the visit when I went out there that because I knew it was either New York or LA. And I'm like, of course, my first visit was Malibu, California. I'm like, this is great. that sealed the deal. It just took me, Craig, it took me a couple years to get the courage up to do it. I knew that's what I had to do. But to leave all my friends and my family behind, it was hard.
Well, to leave for the unknown. It's not like, you had a big job sitting there waiting for you. You might have just been selling Tom McCann shoes in Los Angeles for all you knew.
I had no game plan whatsoever. I just knew that LA was a place I needed to be. I knew that was the first step, and that was about it. But
is your brother in music? Did he go out there for music as well?
He did not, but no, he's not in music. He's what did he do? He was a welder when he first went out there, but he's always been in the trade, contractor and concrete work and stuff like that.
Sure.
But
that's
that
really
was
good, man. Really give you a lot of credit.
Best move I ever did, I mean, it took me, and I went out to Los Angeles thinking, well, gosh, if I don't get a record deal in 5 years, that's it. I'm going to turn around and come back. Boy, was I wrong. 30 years later.
it's funny. I hear a lot of guys say things like the same thing. I thought, do you know a guy named Brian Young?
No, I don't think I do.
I think it was Brian. He goes, man, I thought getting a record deal was everything. It was the worst thing that ever happened to me.
Oh.
So you hear both sides of the coin where people like, I finally got my record deal. I thought I was set. And I've heard that many times from many different people. Where it's like it turned out miserable, you know. So it's just, you never know. It's everybody's destiny is like crapshoot, you know. Who the hell
knows? Totally. It totally is. And I actually, in hindsight, I mean, it would be cool to get a deal, but hear of all the nightmare stories too, you know, the artists getting dropped or ripped off or whatever.
Or you get signed and then you can't, you got to make their record, not your record.
Exactly. Yeah. You know? Yeah, you can't do your own thing.
What have you, is that your nature? Like, have you done other things like that or in other periods of your life, even before or after that, where it's like, you know, you had to do the big thing and you just sort of said, let me suck it up and go for it.
Yeah, a little bit. I'm trying to think back, but LA was definitely the biggest thing I had to do.
Yeah.
Maybe growing up, you know, I played sports and stuff too. So maybe somewhere, you know, when I was playing hockey or football or something like that, but
sure.
Yeah. But mostly LA was the big one, man.
Good for you, man. I really give you credit. So I'm sure everybody wants to know this. How'd you get the gig with Roger Waters? And what are maybe some cool stories, not like gossip, but just cool stories that you could share from that experience? And did you learn anything from that experience, either about performing or singing or, you know, getting along with others or just life lessons?
Oh, man. Yeah, well, let me share with you how I got it, the gig, first of all. So I'm recording in my home studio, and I'm doing a session for a friend of mine. And let me back that up a little bit. But there's a guy in town that I work with. He's a vocal contractor. He's an older guy, you know. But he was one of the key guys when I got into the Screen Actors Guild, when I joined the union, I knew that his name is John, that John is the guy that I have to meet. And, I remember going to some of the union meetings and I went out of my way to finally meet him. And I knew someday just, you know, you got to meet this guy. It's going to pay off. So, you know, and it did, we did a lot of some cool sessions together. Like we did a Capitol Records session with Clint Black and some really cool album projects. But then, you know, 10 years went by, but every time this John calls, I knew that, hey, man, you better pick up the phone. So I'm in the studio, right? I'm recording this other session and my phone rings and it's boom, it's John Joyce. That's the last name, John Joyce, great guy. So I'm like, crap, I better, you know, I hit stop. I took the call right away and he called, it's Robbie, it's John. He goes, hey, man, do you know who Roger Waters is? And I'm like, oh, he goes, okay. He goes, well, Roger's thinking of putting the band back together, but they can't find anybody to do the David Gilmour parts. He goes, do you think you can get close to sounding like David Gilmour? I went, oh, definitely. I said, hell yeah, man. I said, I grew up on, you know, Dark Side of the Moon and The Wall, especially Dark Side.
Yeah.
And so basically he goes, okay, let's, you know, he goes, can you send me something? I said, well, how do you want to do this? I said, I'm in my studio right now. I said, I can, you know, I can record something here and send it to you. And he goes, yeah, let's do that. So we talked about it and ends up that he said, well, just download three of the Pink Floyd tracks, which is Comfortably Numb, Young Lust, Another Brick in the Wall, I think. And he goes, just sing along to those and then just send me your a cappella vocal tracks, you know, with no music. So I'm like, cool. So I did that and I thought, well, I'm going to have to get really spot on. Maybe they wanted, you know, someone to sound like Gilmour who's spot on. So basically I did. And I did those three songs. I sent them to John. John sent them to James Guthrie, who was the Pink Floyd engineer. And he dropped those in. Since I sang along with the original recording, he was able to drop those into the master recording of The Wall, mute Gilmour, and put me up. And it lined up pretty good.
Wow. So this is science. This is no art even. This is like...
It all worked out. It's like, who thought I'd be able to audition in my home studio, you know? So, so the next thing was... John called me up the next day and said, Roger loves what you did. He's really excited. Can you come to James Guthrie's studio in Lake Tahoe and record some more? I'm like, definitely. So anyways, it's a long story. So anyways, long story short, we went to Sacramento, drove to Lake Tahoe, got into James Guthrie's studio. And they said, first of all, I go into the studio and I see all these Pink Floyd masters. I'm already in heaven, right? I'm like, insane. So John asks James Guthrie, how do you want to record Robbie? He said, well, I don't know. He said, he goes, let's just bring up the master recordings of The Wall and sing to that. And I went, what? So I, you know, and I went, man, this is going to be amazing. I said, if I don't get the gig, at least I got to sing up Masters of The Wall.
Yeah.
For the album. I was freaking out because I'm such a huge fan, you know? So basically that's what we did. We went and recorded five more songs. I went in and did, you know, five more tunes. And the cool thing was that he could solo David Gilmour's voice, and I could really hear his technique and how he approached the vocal. And he actually sings much lighter than it sounds. So I'm a pretty loud singer, so I really had to pull back and dial it back a little bit. But, you know, and then James would say, hey, give me 10 minutes. I'm going to do a quick mix. We went out, had a glass of wine. He goes, invited us back in. He goes, here's the mix with Robbie. He put it up in the big speakers, and I was just like, wow, this is amazing. I said, it sounds like Gilmour, but yet me, because I really copped it, you know. So sent that to Roger, and next thing you know, Roger loves what you did. He wants to meet you. Can you come to New York? And I'm like, hell yeah, man.
Holy. So this is like, what are you thinking this whole time? Are you like, is it like surreal?
No, I mean, I've done several auditions where you go through the process and they end up not working out. So I wasn't,
right.
You know, when that first phone call came from John, I got excited, but not too excited, you know, cause you know, sometimes most of the times these things don't pan out.
Sure.
But at this point I'm like, wow, this is really good. He's, you know, I think I've got the gig, man. He, you know, and John told me, he goes, he just wants to seal the deal and meet you in person. And basically that's what it was. So I flew to New York and, went in the studio with Roger. We recorded the song Mother, and James was there, his engineer. He came in first, and I worked with James Guthrie in the booth. Next thing you know, Roger Waters comes behind the glass, and he's giving me direction on how to sing Mother. And I'm just going, wow, how amazing is life that, you know, here I am. There's Roger Waters through the glass. And I was just like, wow, it was amazing. So long story short, yep, that's how I got the gig. And just to end that night after recording with Roger, recording the song Mother, we all went to dinner later that night. And
do you remember where you went?
Gosh, I don't remember the name of the restaurant, but it was right in the city. I remember, what's her name? Kurt Cobain's wife?
Courtney Love?
Courtney Love was sitting right behind us and some other, with her group of friends or something like that. But it was a pretty popular place. I can't think of it. But so anyways, we have Roger was there. The manager was there. The drummer was there. The engineer, James Guthrie, was there. Then some other people from the recording studio. So we had a bit, and you know, Roger's girlfriend at the time, and some of her friends. So there was this big dinner, and they're all toasting. They're going to the tour, and I'm like, no one told me anything. I don't know. I'm like, yeah, to the tour. Ching. I take a sip of wine, and then I'm sitting next to the manager, and he goes, and he says, "Well, Robbie, have you ever been convicted of a felony?" I was like, "No, I'm not." You know, why are you asking me these questions? Have you been to Canada the last 10 years? I'm like, "No." So he's asking me all these questions, and he's like, "Well, there's nothing like this tour. It's nothing but four seasons and private jets." And I'm like, "What?" I'm like, in my mind, I'm going, "Does this mean I got the gig?" And whatever. So the dinner ended, and I, you know, and I'm like, still not sure if I got it. You know, I'm pretty sure, but no one said, "Hey, congrats, you got the gig." So I say goodbye to Roger. I say, "Hey, Roger, it was a pleasure, and I really hope to see you sometime. Thanks for everything." And he patted me on the shoulder. He goes, "Oh, you will hear from, you'll see me again soon." And I'm like, wow. Cool. So,
is it not cool to just like have said, "Hey, does that mean I got the gig?" Or you just, yeah, well, like,
I still didn't know. So the next day I get home, I'm a little jet lagged. It's the next evening, right? I'm in bed, kind of dozing off in my chair, and the phone rings, and it's John Joyce. And he goes, Robbie, he goes, "I just got off the phone with Roger. He did not know how to contact you, but he just told me," he goes, "he loves what you did. He loves your voice, and he thinks you're a real team player. And he goes, the tours is yours if you want it." And I went, what? I freaked out. I'm like, wow. Yeah, I couldn't believe it. Right. So there was a confirmation, and this is the final of it, end of it. But and my wife is in bed sleeping because she has to get him go to work in the morning, and she's such a light sleeper. She hates to be woken up. Right. So I go to open the door of the bedroom, and I grab the handle of the door, open it up. And she goes, she's all of a sudden, it's like already pissed off that I woke her up. She goes, "What are you doing? I got to get him go to work." And I reach for the light switch, and she saw me. She goes, "Don't you dare turn that light switch." I flick, turned it on. She goes, "God damn it. I'm the back." And I looked at her, and I said, she goes, "I got to get him go to work. What are you doing?" I said, I looked at her, I go, "I got it." And she's like, "What?" I go, "I got it." And she looked at me. She realized what I was talking about. So she's like, "Oh my God." She jumps out of bed, and we opened a bottle of wine, and
that's so cool. Man, what a great story. Congratulations. So, that's nice, yeah. Man.
So thanks to John Joyce. He was the guy that referred me to to audition. And I guess they've tried a bunch of singers out. I mean, all the background singers, I think, tried out from Kip Lennon, Mark Lennon, Pat Lennon. I think even Joe Pizzullo and some other singers tried out to do the Gilmore part. But knowing, you know, luckily it was right in my wheelhouse and, you know, Roger loved it. So that's my long story of how I got the gig.
Any cool stories?
Yeah, I got a couple. The one that comes to mind right off the top of my head is when we were, I think 2012, we were doing stadiums at this time, and we just played Berlin, and we were back at the hotel after the concert, and we're, you know, as Roger does, he likes to have these meals and drinks afterwards because we're kind of hungry after the show. We call it the golden trough.
That's awesome. So,
and that night, you know, Roger and his girlfriend at the time had a bunch of friends. They always have their
Was it a different girlfriend at the time from the New York? Is he like rotate girlfriends or?
No, he was dating her for, I think, 10 years, but he eventually got married and it went south pretty quick. But anyways, they always had a lot of friends. So we were in the, we went down to the main lobby in the restaurant at the hotel, and Roger was there and a lot of his friends and Lori's friend, her name is Lori, and they were very drunk, especially this one guy, big tall dude. And his name was Todd. He was really hammered. I'm watching, and there's only one security guy there. Roger's, usually has two guys, but there was one guy, you know, on security that night who's Roger's like personal security guard. Anyways, this big tall, one of his friends gets up, he's wasted, and there's this dude sitting at a table with another, looked like, you know, just with another guy sitting with him. So this drunk guy bumps into this other dude and spills his drink all over the place. And this guy ends up, he was Serbian or Russian or something, and he turns around at a foreign language and starts chewing them out. And this one of Lori and Roger's friend was so hammered, he was just, you know, telling this guy off, flipping him the bird, F you, and you know, you can't talk to me like that, and then pushed him back. Next thing you know, this Russian guy stood up, and the guy sitting with him was his own personal security guard. So this guy, somebody's important, I don't know. So it turned to the shoving match, and all of a sudden, Roger's security guard gets up and tries to step in, and he's all alone. And next thing you know, this guy, Russian or Serbian dude, has his nephews and uncles and his family members come in. So all of a sudden, there's like eight people there going against this guy. And Pompey, there's two of them. And all the other band members are watching this. I'm like, man, I got to step in and help them. So I'm like, put my drink down. I'm like, Pompey, what's going on here? His name's Pompey, the security guard. So I get in, and this Russian guy turns into a major fight, and they're pushing each other, major fighting match. And this guy's charging. Pompey's holding him off with his arms. And I'm stepping in the middle to help out Roger's security guard. And this guy just, you know, he's coming at this drunk guy, Todd. And I had to literally stop and stick my shoulder and gave him like a football freaking hit, you know, and put him up against the bar. I'm like, everybody just calm down, trying to defuse the situation. Anyways, it got way out of hand. The hotel security got involved, and they were turned into this big fist fight. The security got punched out. The police came. And apparently these guys were all whole packing guns. So Roger said, he puts me in the cigar room. He goes, go in that room and do not come out. I'll take care of this. And I found out later that they were like starting to pull out their guns, and it got really ugly. So
that holy was crap.
The Berlin brawl story.
Wow. But let me ask you a question.
I didn't get hurt, but you know, it was pretty ugly. Some people got hurt.
Can a guy like Roger Waters stay in a hotel? I mean, doesn't he get approached like nonstop? How could he go anywhere without being recognized?
Pretty much. I mean, people know he's staying in the hotels for sure. They, you know, there's always lines out the, you know, in the front of the hotel trying to get autographs and stuff like that. But sometimes he can be, you know, pretty unassuming. I'll never forget the night we played in Montreal. We sold out this hockey arena the night before, and then the very next night we went in to see a hockey game, and there's Roger Waters walking around. Nobody had a clue who he was. It was interesting because we're across the arena. We could see him across the ice, and we could say, wow, look at Roger, man. Like, no one has a clue. He just sold this place out yesterday.
Did he have, like, you know, a mask or, like, you know, mustache or hair or hat or
something like that? He's just him. He doesn't do that stuff. He's just himself. But, you know, probably because it was a hockey audience, they didn't know who he was. But
that's wild.
But other than that, yeah, he's usually you know, people are, you know, not mobbing him, but are always trying to track him down for an autograph or a photo or, you know, yeah. So he's got such a huge fan base.
Well, I mean, he's been around 50 years and it's not like he had a couple of hits. I mean, he's changed the scripture, you know, the landscape of music with some of the music he's put out. I mean, really, him and Gilmore have. Did you get some of that? Because this was such a big tour where people would spot you and say, "Hey, that's the singer."
Yeah. I mean, from the time I started touring with him until, you know, I would say probably after the first 6 months to a year, people started, you know, recognizing me, who I was and stuff. So like even to the point, I would, you know, people would catch any of the band members outside. We'd all take pictures and autographs and meet as many people as we could. But I remember coming out, like, you know, on stage a couple, you know, years later, like 2011 or whatever, 2012. And like, I'd step out on stage just to see the audience beforehand. All of a sudden they were going, Robbie, you know, I was like, whoa, it was pretty cool.
What's it like when you're in a 60,000-70,000 seat stadium and all of a sudden you hear your voice? I mean, what was it like what was that like for you?
It's pretty epic, man. It's hard to explain, hard to put into words sometimes, because for me it's a total dream come true. It's pretty awesome, man. I mean, especially through, you know, that sound system. We had the quad sound and everything, but
you probably had state of the art everything on that tour.
Yeah, it was amazing. It was awesome. It was just, like I said, it was just a dream come true for me. And especially in those stadiums, it's something that I've always dreamed of since I've been a little kid.
That's so cool.
So it's pretty awesome.
That's great, man.
Another quick story I was going to tell you real quick.
Yeah.
When we were in Oslo, it's a pretty funny story. There's a part of the show where the second half where, I don't know if you remember the living room scene where Roger's sitting in his chair with the lamp and he does, is it One of My Turns? I can't remember.
Yes, he does one. You mean where they're going back in time and the, you know, he's having all the memories of.
Yeah.
Yeah, and watching the TV.
Yeah, exactly, watching the TV.
I've seen The Wall like fucking 30 times.
there's that scene. Well, in our concert, we had where the part of the wall folds down and it turns into the living room scene. And Roger walks out and he sits in the chair and he's watching TV and the lamp. Well, this particular night in Oslo, the whole living room set started coming down and stopped. It got stuck in the middle. So you hear everybody on the radio is going, you know, abort, abort, abort. And Roger's going, no, let it go. And so basically the living room scene didn't come out and Roger had to wing it. So he goes out on stage. This is Roger Waters. It was so cool. You know, the crowd's like, you know, what's going on? Roger goes out and starts telling jokes. It's like, well, we're obviously having some technical difficulties. So, and he went out and told this funny ass joke about Gorbachev and he had him right in the palm of their hand. And it was the best thing. I mean, so since that night, we called him the Wizard of Oslo. Because he took a situation like that took a while to fix. Actually, no, it never did get fixed. He ended up doing the song on the front of the stage. But he went out and just, you know, and had the crowd right in his hand by telling jokes and just being really personable with him. I just love that about Roger.
You know what? I bet you that was the name of that bootleg. The Wizard of Oz. That's it, right? Seriously, isn't that a perfect like boot? Can't you see that as the name of boot? Totally. Yeah, The Wizard of Oslo.
Kip Lennon came up with that. He coined that phrase. It was pretty funny, but pretty cool.
That's awesome.
I mean, there's a lot of lessons I learned too. I mean, if you want to.
Yeah. What are two out of three of the takeaways that you got out of that? Outside of don't mess with a guy with a gun in a.
Yeah,
well, a Russian dude with a gun. Note to self.
Yeah, really. Well, I didn't know the guy was packing, first of all. But, well, you know, just from the whole experience of being, you know, from doing that tour with Roger, I learned that dreams do come true if you never give up on your dreams and you just continue to persevere. You know, and I always try to encourage other people, the up-and-coming singers. I'm like, man, do not give up. Never, ever give up. You know, that's been my motto since I've been a little kid, you know, and I learned by watching Roger too, and you know, his whole work ethic, and how he was involved in every detail of the show, from not only the music and the arrangements, but to the lighting, to every aspect of the, you know, the sound design, the visuals on the videos that were coming up, and And to watch that man work, it was pretty incredible because he would, he's so hands-on. And when he had an idea musically or any other idea, he acted on it immediately and just made it happen. You know, it was just, it was pretty awesome, man. And then, you know, just his, we wrote a song, he wrote a song while we were on tour. And just to see that process, was pretty cool. Cause every day at soundcheck, he would come with, you know, handwritten lyrics. And I got this idea, man. And he would like, and he'd strum along with the guitar and sing a bit. And then he'd work it out. And then he'd tell us what to sing, background parts. So it was really cool to watch how he approached songwriting as well, especially just that, you know, one time I saw him write that song, which ended up being on his new album now.
This new album is phenomenal, by the way. The one I listened to it. I did not a write up, but I posted it up on our Facebook page and said, "Hey, worth the 20-year wait."
20 years, you believe it?
Yeah, I know. Yeah, it's well worth it. Great album.
Definitely, man. It's finally, I'm so glad you put another record out, you know. You know, and I also learned that, you know, everybody is, we're all just the same all over the world, you know. People are, you know, we just speak different languages, but you know, inside I think we pretty much are all the same, and how we all connect to music and how powerful music is and how it really unites us, connects us, everybody, you know. It doesn't matter what language you speak, because, you know, music is such a universal language. And, you know, it's, and then connecting with audiences of like 80,000 people, you know, that energy you feel coming off the stage. And the last thing we did with the Desert Trip concert, we did a free concert in Mexico City in 2016. And over 300,000 people showed up for our show. So that was,
my God,
extraordinary, man, to feel that energy coming off those people. And, you know, and the love that you get back, that, you know, it's just incredible, magical experience. So a lot of stuff I learned, but those are probably the key points, I would say.
And thank you for sharing that. And that is sure. Real nice. I'm glad you got to experience that. That's when you said, "I learned that dreams come true." Did you ever at some point when you're, you know, when you're anywhere in the middle of the tour, think back like, "Oh my God, I started selling shoes. Thank God I quit that Tom McCann job." I mean, you had to think about like, what a freaking story that is.
Definitely, man. It was, that crossed my mind a lot, or just to think, you know, the fact that I'm, you know, on stage with such a legend and doing this incredible music, you know, I'm playing in front of all these adoring fans that just are, you know, he has so many fans. But yeah, I reflected a lot, especially from where I've come from, you know, from selling shoes to, you know, a little small town in Traverse City to, moving to LA and working hard all these years and not giving up. Cause there was plenty of times where, you know, I could have said, "Hey man, this isn't working out. I'm going to go back home to Michigan and sell shoes or whatever." No, I would never do that. But you know, cause I've seen a lot of my friends. And
you're going to get a recruiting letter from Tom McCann tomorrow.
I don't even know if they're still in business.
I don't know. Robbie, we want you.
You can be the manager. Actually, I already was the manager. District
manager. No. They're regional.
I've seen a lot of my, you know, friends come out and a lot of other people come out and make it. And if it doesn't happen within a certain amount of time, then, well, that's it. It didn't work out and they give up. And I'm like, no, never give up. So, yeah, man. But to reflect back, yeah, during the concert, there was some pretty amazing times. And it was hard. There was a moment where I was in Australia, and since my mom was a British, my aunt and uncle had family in Australia. My aunt, who was 91 at the time, she was 89, came to the concert. And my mother and her went through the London Blitz during World War II when they were little girls.
Oh, wow.
She found out that she was a mechanic on the Spitfire airplanes. And there's a scene in the concert where, you know, I think it's Vera, and yep. Vera, where the Spitfires are flying around. And so there was this really cool connection to the whole wall, you know, Roger Waters, the Wall live concert. It was like, because my family was somewhat connected to, you know, it was just really, it's pretty amazing that my mother and my aunt worked on the Spitfire planes and she could relate. And, it was on so many levels, Craig. It was pretty amazing.
That's so awesome. Really good. Really good story. Where in England was, off question, where in England was your mom from, if you know?
The London area. I believe she was raised in a little place, a little village called Cricklewood.
Yeah, because my wife's from the UK, and her mom, her mom was the same thing. Anne's mom was in, you know, her and her sisters were all in the war, and they, you know, had to deal with all that stuff.
Oh,
like bombs dropping all over the place. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, the raid and stuff, man. My aunt told me a lot of stuff they went through.
It was like no food. They'd have to have like a couple of some canned beans, you know, just, you know. In fact, my wife was raised, grew up eating beans on toast because that's what you
eat. Is that right?
And she still eats. It's just like that's her, you know, she doesn't eat it because it's wartime rations. It's just what she grew up eating. So it's like English food when she's home.
That's cool.
Yeah. It's funny. Wow. If you can answer this, and if you can't, that's totally cool.
Okay.
I read that the Wall tour was supposed to be one of the highest grossing tours ever, and you don't have to say if that was or wasn't. What I'm questioning is, was that from the ticket prices? Again, if you know and if you could say, or was it just crazy merch sales there, or was it both?
I would say primarily it'd be from the ticket sales. Hmm. I mean, I don't know for sure, but I know the tickets were pretty expensive. I know that there was like you buy the VIP tickets for, I mean, I think it went up to $700 or $1,000, but you know, that way you get meet and greet with Roger and you get an autographed picture and all that. But I would say it's mostly the ticket sales because there were, our show sold out pretty much everywhere we went. Every arena and stadium, I mean, it would sold like from 20 minutes, you know, they would announce it and like 20 minutes later, it would be like sold out and they'd have to add more dates and more dates. But the merch sales, I think, I don't know if that's how that worked out, but yeah, the merch lines were insane. I mean, I've never seen so much, you know,
they had to have I would imagine needed multiple trucks of merch just for each show.
Yeah, definitely. There was I think they had one trailer full of just merch. every merchandise station throughout the arena or stadium, man, was lines around the corner. I mean, it was nuts, packed, man. Yeah, I'm not sure how that worked, whether, you know, the promoter got they split the money with Roger or what, but I would say primarily I would think it was such a huge thing because of the ticket sales. I mean, we even broke the Rolling Stones record when we played at the River Plate Stadium in Buenos Aires, is it? Yeah, they did five sold out concerts and we did nine.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
That's so cool. That being said, from a business standpoint, people need to consider what it costs to put on a tour of this magnitude. So, you know, gross and net are two different numbers. You know, so, you know, keep that in mind, you know, I can't imagine what the cost to support a tour
such
like
a
this
huge production, Craig. Yeah. It was huge. I mean,
they probably had a couple of thousand employees supporting this at each tour, I would imagine.
Probably. I know our crew alone was about 130 guys when we did arenas and stadium. It got up to about, I don't know, 250 or so.
Wow.
You know, that's just the crew, which is amazing. They're the guys that made it all happen. So kudos to the crew. Those guys make it all happen. I don't even know how they do it, man. But ticket sales, I would say, you know, because Roger's fan base around the world is so massive. I mean, it's it's pretty cool that it's, you know, still one of the largest grossing tours in history, you know.
That is cool.
Yeah.
Hey, you've worked with some really cool artists, and I was curious if you could talk about, you know, how you got the gig. Again, and if there's any cool story about working with them, Keith Emerson.
That man was awesome. That guy was he was a charming guy, man. He was so funny. I got that gig through my some friends here in LA, Richie Onori and Stuart Smith. They had been working with, somehow they knew Keith, and then Keith wanted to put a band together. And I'd already been working with Richie, who's a drummer, really great drummer, and Stuart's really great guitar player.
And Keith, for people listening, if you don't know, Keith Emerson was the keyboard player from Emerson, Lake & Palmer.
Yeah. And boy.
Genius writer. And
yeah, absolutely genius, man. Such an icon. But yeah, so we actually didn't, it was kind of short-lived, but we ended up we rehearsed a lot, and we did, we started playing some clubs in Hollywood. We did, you know, maybe a handful of shows around town. And then he, you know, shortly after that, he got the, you know, ELP back together and went on tour with them. So the name of our band was called the the Aliens of Extraordinary Ability.
It's a pretty cool name.
Yeah, which is Stuart Smith came up with that. But I think it's something to do with when you're an alien from, you know, you have your alien card or something like that. Anyways, we were just called the Aliens. But it was great, man, doing all the ELP stuff. I, you know, a lot of instrumental stuff, but I got to sing, you know, Touch and Go and some of the other songs. It was pretty special. And Keith was a funny guy, super charming. And that was another one of those moments where I remember, I'll never forget, I'm in the garage rehearsing, and I look over and there's Keith Emerson, and I go, how did this happen? Freaking Keith Emerson from ELP in a band. It's just so surreal and so amazing. And yeah, life's pretty unbelievable sometimes.
Did you sing, you know, one of my favorite ELP, I think it was an ELP song, not a Greg Lake song, is like Father Christmas or something like that. You know, that Christmas song? It's such a beautiful
one. Yeah.
Yeah. Beautiful song, man.
Beautiful song. I never did sing it.
Oh, it's no, beautiful just, song. How about, I was going to ask you about Greg Raleigh, but man, let's talk about Eddie Vedder. How did that come about?
Oh, Eddie Vedder. Sure. That was just, well, thanks to Roger Waters. We ended up playing the concert. Remember the Hurricane Sandy concert?
Yeah. Up in New York.
Yeah. That's called, yeah, the 12-12-12 concert for Hurricane Sandy relief, which we were, Roger Waters was a part of that. And
is he in New York? He lives in New York?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
He lives in New York. I think he's got a place in the city and then in the Hamptons or something like that. But anyways, Roger invited Eddie Vedder to sing Comfortably Numb. And he wanted me to, which is normally my gig, you know, because I sing comfortably. The chorus is on Comfortably Numb and Roger does the verses. But he had Eddie Vedder do it this time, which is, yeah, no problem, man. I love Eddie Vedder. So, and he goes, and he wanted me to sing the background parts to it. So the cool thing was that, you know, I just got to hang with Eddie. He's like, yeah, man, come in my dressing room. Let's go over it. And he was so complimentary, man. He goes, yeah, because he learned Comfortably Numb from my vocals, you know, from the recordings that Roger had given him. So he was like, gee, I love your voice. And I said, back at you, man. I love your voice. So we just sat in the room and we were going over. I got to sing backgrounds with Eddie Vedder, you know, and he's telling me some really cool stories. And you know, remember one story he told me while we were rehearsing for this, that he, at one point when he was up in Seattle, I think he just decided to take like 3 to 5 days, and he loaded up his backpack and went down to the railway station and waited for a train to come by and just hopped a train and rode on the train for a couple days. And through that experience, he ended up writing some of his biggest hits. It was like a really, really cool story. You know, I couldn't tell you what the names of the songs were, but
sure.
You know, some of those early hits from the Nirvana stuff, sorry, not Nirvana, from the Pearl Jam stuff.
I saw them live in, I think 2009 or 10, put on a great show.
They're what a band, man. And he was such a, he's such a humble, sweet guy too. And, so that was my experience with, my one and only with Eddie Vedder. Thanks to Roger, cause we did the concert for Sandy.
Did a lot of things, opportunities come out of that work you do with Roger?
There's been a couple of things. The concert for Sandy was definitely one of them. Of course the desert trip was another one, you know, cause we did the Wall tour and then 2 or 3 years later we did Desert Trip in 2016, which that was another thing. I'm glad he kept me on board for that.
And that was another Roger Waters.
Yeah. It was called, it was in Coachella. It was in October of 2016, called the Desert Trip with Paul McCartney, Bob Dylan, the Rolling Stones, The Who, and Neil Young. And then we closed the night on Sunday night.
How does that work? If you even know, is there like a, you know, you got Paul McCartney, Bob Dylan there. How do they pick? Okay. Who's going to close?
Like
who's going to, you know, with, yeah. I mean, or who's going to close and who, you know, there's always a, you know,
yeah.
who's going to be a part of it. And then like, then you got to make the decision, oh, who's going to close? Is it, do you have to do pay deference to this guy, or, you know, is this guy going to get his feelings hurt, or how does that shit all work?
It's a really good question. I don't know how they chose the lineup. Yeah. Cause you would think, or they would mix it up, but the lineup was pretty much, it was the same. Both.
Yeah.
It started out with Bob Dylan, and then it was Neil Young. Then after Neil Young, I believe it was the Rolling Stones, then Paul McCartney, and then The Who, and then, we ended up.
It's a pretty sick lineup.
But it's unfortunately, I didn't get to meet any of the other band members. You know, I would have loved to have met Paul, of course, or Roger Daltrey, or any of those guys.
Yeah.
But
talk about a guy with a great voice.
Oh, no
Roger
kidding.
Daltrey, how the hell has he been screaming at the top of his lungs for 50 years, man?
He's still killing it. He's great, man. But, I've had some other opportunities come out of it. You know, a couple little things. I've done some separate little Pink Floyd shows in New York City and some in Vancouver, British Columbia, over in Canada. Some other recording opportunities and stuff. So, it's been good, man.
Great, man. And how did you get the gig with Shrek? And what did you do on Shrek? One of the greatest child, was that Pixar, I think it was?
It was DreamWorks.
What a great movie that was.
That was the very first Shrek. I got that through my good friend Danny Jacob and his wife Mary Lotta, his ex-wife now, unfortunately, but great people. Danny was helped produce a lot of the songs on there, and Mary Lotta, his wife at the time, was the music supervisor for DreamWorks Pictures. So she did The Prince of Egypt and a bunch of other animations, and she got me on board to be part of the singers, you know, the group singers. And then she had me do, like, I got to do the demos for, you know, Eddie Murphy and Mike Myers for the donkey and for Shrek. And so I did all their demos, and then I just did background vocals for the most part. And then we had our version of that song, I'm a Believer. I know Smash Mouth did a version. Then we had our own version that played at the end credits. So that was my little Shrek moment there for you.
That's cool, man.
Then, you know, it went into the DVD, and then I was on the DVD and stuff like that. But yeah, great, great movie. Yeah. Still a classic.
Very nice, man. Are you working on anything now that you're excited about? Because I know you're really busy right now.
Yeah, man. I'm right now I'm excited. This project I've been working on with Corey Lirius. He's the founding member of Pablo Cruz. But back in the day, he did all of the music for the TV show Baywatch. Remember Baywatch?
Yeah. I never watched it, but I know. How could you not? Yeah. I never watched it, but I always enjoyed it. Corey's the keyboard player?
Corey's the keyboard player, yeah. And he did all of the music for that show. And just recently found out that they're going to remaster the whole show in HD. And so he needs a lot more songs because the songs that were on the original series, no longer... They're not in perpetuity anymore, whatever that word is. So the contract expired him. So he needed to replace like 300 songs. So I've been writing and recording songs with Doug Bossy, by the way, for
that's awesome.
The new Baywatch remastered project. And I'm really excited about that. Doug and I wrote a couple of really great songs. And so that's been cool. That's an ongoing thing.
Do you have Pamela Anderson reruns running in the background?
Sure, actually. We get the clips. So we get to watch these all, you know.
I had a funny feeling, yeah.
So David Hasselhoff, you know, we see these clips and, girls in bathing suits and guys surfing. And
that's so funny.
It's easy to watch, let me tell you.
I'm sure it's not rough on the eyes, yeah.
Yeah, that's been fun. And then I just, I'm just getting into voiceover, so I just finished up my Kalmanson voiceover classes here in Burbank, which I'm pretty excited about that. I've done some voiceover work, but looking forward to doing more of that. And like I mentioned earlier, I finished an album with a really good friend of mine, Fred Buehr, who was the drummer in my original band back in Traverse City, Michigan.
In Lyric.
Lyric, that was the name of my original band, which actually reformed out here in Los Angeles, and we did really well. But anyways, Fred, the drummer from that band, he wrote an album and I helped him co-write that record, and it came out really great. So I'm really excited about that. Like I mentioned to you, it just got mastered, so we don't have a name. He's still working on a name for the record, but when that becomes available, I'll let you know and send you the link to it.
Yeah, man, I'll put the link up on the
Songs are strong. It's kind of a
what kind of music?
almost, believe it or not, it's kind of a kind of country pop rock almost, I would say, but that's a little bit of a country flavor, but it's just really good songs. Rock and roll, you know.
When you're a singer, I think there's less, you probably have more flexibility about, oh, he's a, you know, that jazz guy, or he's that metal guy, or he's the blues guy. I think you probably, right, as a singer, because you're, is that how it is? Or like, do you get pigeonholed? I mean, unless you're like Rob Halford or something like that. I mean,
yeah, unless you got something, one style or something like that. But no, I mean, I primarily probably do a lot of rock stuff, but you'd be surprised, I do just as much, you know, country stuff or big band stuff.
That's what I'm saying. I think
it's all over the map, which is cool. I mean, Motown, R&B, I love soul music. So it's like, I do a lot of that stuff too. The challenge is when you look back and go, okay, well, who am I as an artist? And, you know, what's my style? Then you kind of, I love so many different styles and I do so many different genres of music, and, you know, I don't do opera or anything like that, but still it's hard to find out your own style, but
yeah. Yeah. You know, when I was many, many years ago, I was, in a sales job, and it was brutal because we had to make just, it was dialing for dollars every day. I mean, it was really freaking brutal. Wow. And it was not, you know, the ratios of hits are so low. And I was going to a therapist at a time, and she said, and I was like, man, I can't deal with this. I'm not successful. And she said, remember that who you are is not necessarily what you do. And I was like, wow, that was really good. And I put it on my wall, but that's easy when things are going bad, you know. when things are going good, you're like, yeah, I'm with this, you know. But that's a good, but I always thought that was a good backdrop at the time. It was like, yeah, fuck that. I'm not a loser insurance salesman. I'm a dad. I'm a good husband. I'm a blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Yeah. It's really weird, these mind games that we play with ourselves to like get through period A to the next, this hump and get to the next hump. You know, it's, as some guy I was talking to today goes, man, it's all about that 6 inches of space between your ears, you know?
Totally. And totally.
It really is.
Totally is. Yeah.
You grew up in Traverse City, you said. Sounds like a pretty good childhood.
Excuse me?
It sounds like you had a pretty good childhood growing up.
Yeah, I had a great childhood. You know, I'm so fortunate to have grown up in such a beautiful place. You know, it's, does get a lot of snow, but, you know, the summer times are beautiful. Northern Michigan's just got so many lakes and a lot of water. And I grew up, you know, my dad was a big outdoorsman. So, you know, I ended up being a big outdoorsman, from camping, canoeing, backpacking, fishing, awesome, hunting. So I love the outdoors. And yeah, it was great, man. I just, a lot of great memories there.
Nice.
Always doing camp, you know, like I said, we did a lot of really great, trips. We'd go up to, you know, my dad, like I said, he loved canoeing. He was quite the outdoorsman. So we'd do these trips up in Canada for, you know, like a week at a time, and just be out backpacking and fishing. And it was wonderful, you know, because you could just drive up from Michigan just over the border there and you'd be in Canada. But yeah, loved growing up there. You know, since we had so much snow, I you know, did a lot of the winter sports, from playing ice hockey and skiing and ice fishing, all that stuff. And do you follow basketball at all?
Do I follow basketball? I try to follow the Knicks. It's kind of difficult and depressing. But why, you're?
Oh, well, I just got to give my best friend when I grew up was Dan Marley. I don't know if you know who he is.
Yeah, from the Heat,
Phoenix Suns.
He was with Miami Heat. Yeah, Dan Marley. Because I'm in Florida. I used to live in South Florida when Dan Marley was playing there. So you were best friends with Dan Marley?
Yeah, when we were growing up, and when we were little kids, I remember this when we were little kids. We'd always talk about, you know, what we wanted to do when we grew up. And when we grew up, we're going to do this. And I always, you know, we did play ice hockey together, and we played football together. And he was one of those super talented athletes that you just knew, man. He could play any sport. And just, so anyways, just a plug for Dan.
Dan, that's awesome. Are you still friendly with him?
I've been running into him every so often when I travel. I ran into him in the Phoenix airport. That's the funniest thing, because I was like, he was on my mind. I'm like, oh, how cool would it be to go see Dan? And I'm talking on the phone with my wife. I'm like, yeah, I've got a really big layover. I'm thinking about going to his grill. It's called Marley's Bar and Grill. Yeah, it'd be really cool. And I look up as I'm thinking about him, and he's walking towards me in the airport. I'm like, how weird is that?
Oh, so wow. Like, That's really cool. That's
nice. I see him every so often. He's coaching now. He's been coaching for a while. So, but yep, it's great. Traverse City is a beautiful place, man. And now it's becoming my little hometown. Is becoming, they're calling it the Napa Valley of the Midwest because there's so many wineries and craft beer. It's pretty place, pretty amazing place. And yeah, very fortunate to grow up in such a great place.
I'm going to tell my younger son that you're buddies with Dan Marley. He's the jock in the house. You know,
is that right?
Yeah, my younger boy is the big jock. That's cool. And so it's just you and your brother, or is it, you see, it's just your brother and you, or is it, you had more?
No, I have two sisters.
Oh, big family.
I'm the youngest of four. So I've got, two sisters and, my brother. And I have my eldest sister, she's 13 years older than me. And I have to, give her a little plug as well, because, you know, thinking back when I was growing up, if it wasn't for her record collection, I don't know if I would have been exposed to some of the great music. So I was always in, you know, she was turning me on to her albums, you know, so she was listening to, actually the Beatles was probably the first music I remember listening to. The Hey Jude played all the time in our house. All the Beatles music was playing in our house all the time. And then Mahavishnu Orchestra, all of her great records, you know, it was cool. So
what's her name?
Christine.
Shout out Christine. Thank you. Christine. That's cool, man. There you go, Christine.
Her nickname. So yeah, so she exposed me to a lot of great music, so really thankful to her.
Very and, cool.
And my brother Garrett, of course, too. I got to give a shout out to him. He's the one who got me in my first band, because when his best friend was a bass player in high school, and he said, we have my, you know, because I grew up singing in choir. Okay. Yeah, my brother can sing, and I got into this one band, and that was it. I haven't been stopped since.
Good for you, man. That's awesome.
Yeah, man. So,
and so you knew you wanted to become, a singer pretty early.
I did. Yeah, I just even from a young age. You know, I remember singing came really easy to me. I would sing along with stuff on the radio, and then my mother got me into choir. And then once I was in choir, it was like, oh, I just fell in love with it, you know, and kept on singing all the way through high school. Just loved choir. I still love choral music to this day. So it's pretty awesome. Love it. Right. Is that what your question was?
Yeah. It was totally cool. What are some of the bigger obstacles that you've had to overcome throughout this, you know, journey you've been on? Cause you've been at this a long time.
Yeah, it's been a while, man.
And I know every day isn't every day in paradise.
The biggest challenge for me probably, just on a personal level was, surviving cancer. That was a big one for me.
Oh my God.
I was diagnosed with cancer in 1995. And, when I was a very young man, and, at the time when I got diagnosed, I don't think they didn't tell you what stage it was, but It was pretty advanced that I had to get chemo treatments immediately, or they told me, I remember the doctor sat me down and said, well, if you don't get treatments immediately, you'll probably have about 6 months to live. And I just went, okay, let's do the treatments.
Wow. So basically,
yeah, I went through 4 months of really intense chemotherapy, and that was a big challenge getting through that, surviving it, knowing that you're going to survive it too, because not only mentally, but physically, it was challenging all the way around.
So you were like probably early 30s.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. And it's pretty aggressive, the chemo they give you at a young age.
Yeah. Very aggressive. What I had was testicular cancer.
Mm.
So it had spread to my lymph nodes and to my chest and my abdomen. It was a lot of, he told me, literally thousands of tumors in my body. So he had to.
Holy shit.
Yeah, it was gnarly. So I had to go and get my chemo treatments for, I did it for 4 months, and for every month I would be in the hospital for a week solid getting chemo around the clock 24/7. And then for the other 3 weeks of each month, I would come back as an outpatient for, 3 hours to get my treatments. But when I was out of the hospital, man, I was, because I couldn't eat, because I couldn't keep anything down, but I was out doing my gigs, man. I'd get some food in me. And on the weekends when I was out of the hospital, I'd still go and do my gigs. That's how my wife met me. Actually, I was doing gigs when I had like no hair. I looked like,
wow. Like me.
I was
It's all good, man.
Yeah, man. So
it's out of my control. Nothing bothers me that's out of my control, to be honest with you.
I actually love being bald, man. It was great.
That's because you don't have the option. It's like when you have no money, like, fuck, if I could just go to the mall, then you have money. Like, who the hell wants to go to the mall, you know? But wow, that's wild. So you had, wow, that is wild. I wasn't expecting to hear that. So,
yeah.
How long after that? You had to go back probably what, like every 6 months for 4 or 5 years?
For about 5 years, I went back every month, and then it was every 3 months, and then I think 6 months, and then, you know, the more the time passes, the less you have to go back. So finally, I think it was after my 5 year mark, he said you're considered cured and done, and I knew I was cured, and I got and I know God's hand was on me.
Wow.
Shout out. I mean,
dude, you are a fucking warrior.
Yeah. I mean, you know, by the grace of God, I'm still here.
And yeah, for sure.
Second, you know, new lease on life, and really helped me put a lot of things into perspective.
So let's talk about it. What are some of the things, like the outlook that you had before and after cancer? And I'm not saying like it was day one. I'm sure this is a process of time that you start putting this shit together. This isn't like, okay, I'm cancer free. Here's my new outlook on life.
I remember at the time, you know, I used to, before I got cancer, it was, you know, financially it was just, there was some, you know, hard financial times, and, you know, you stress about what I call little things now, like how you're going to pay the bills, or how you're going to come up with the rent money, or how you're going to whatever. It's like, you know, when I was lying in bed getting my chemo, it's like nothing else in the world mattered except getting better. Like all that stuff was just small stuff, small beans. And it was like, it really doesn't matter. It's not important. What was important was getting better and, you know, and just trying to beat it, you know, which I did. But then it changed, made me really think of, you know, my diet, you know, what caused it. Cause the doctors told me it was a mystery. They don't know what caused the cancer. So I'm like, I better, you know, take a look at what I'm eating. And, you know, so I've definitely changed my diet since then. And that was, you know, a long time ago. That was 1995, but
you eat pretty clean now.
Yeah. You know, I do my best. It's, you know, that can be challenging too. But yeah, you know, no, I haven't eaten fast food in ages, you know, in years and years, but yeah, stopped all that crap. So that was, you know, and what's important to you, family and friends, and, you know, just the important things in life really.
When you were,
really matter, you know?
When you were sick, I would imagine that you knew you were going to beat it, because I know people that have had cancer, and every one of them said, I was praying, but I knew I was going to beat this.
Yeah, I did. I mean, there are those times where, you know, you can get a little dark. You know, I remember being alone in the hospital at night going, oh shit, you know, I'm not going to, you know, you think in your mind, you get into this little space like, gosh, what if I don't make it? What if I die? You know, and I'm not going to beat this disease. But as soon as you think that thought, I'd be like, shut the fuck up, get out of here. And I
did. Yeah. No, you have to.
Thought out of my head. I couldn't allow any negative thoughts in my mind whatsoever. And it was such a mental thing. I mean, you had to really stay positive. And, you know, I've encouraged other friends of mine that have, actually recently some friends that just got diagnosed with the same thing, like, dude, it's a positive, just stay positive, you're going to beat this. And not, and for me, it was like, I knew I was going to be, I was, you know, like 95% sure I was going to beat it, you know, but there was that little 5% chance it would sneak in every once in a while going, yeah, you know, make you freak out about it. But through a lot of prayer and by God's grace, man, I definitely. And Doug Bossy is another guy, man. He played a role in that too. The guy's been a dear friend.
He's a super supportive guy, man. See that.
Well, you know, it's weird. Just something really quick with Doug. That I remember that night, the night before I got diagnosed, he called me up, and he was down at the rehearsal studio, and he said, hey, Rob, I got this song I want you to sing. It was going to be perfect for you. He goes, he took it out of the Bible. It was out of Psalms, and it's called God's Love Never Fails. And yeah, so I went down and I went to the studio and I started, he wrote it, and this beautiful melody, I'm singing it. And while I'm singing, I'm feeling this pain. I'm going, man, what is this pain I'm feeling? And I was in pain. Little did I know, next day was the day I went to get diagnosed and found out I had cancer. And to me, it was like the whole message, like, God was telling me, hey, man, you're going to go through some shit right now, but my love's never going to fail you. I'm going to be there to hold you up. So to me, there was just a lot of that, you know, I'm a really spiritual guy. So I really believe that, that was, there was no mistake, you know, and some other, a lot of cool stuff that happened around that time to kind of prepare me for it. And, you know, to knowing that I was going to beat it, like, which is your question, I think. But yeah, I knew I was going to beat it.
Wow, man. Thank you. That is intense. You don't need to talk about any more obstacles. I hope you don't have any bigger one than that. No, Robbie.
You know, honestly, you know, there was hard times and stuff, but you kind of make it through that, you know. By doing what we do, you know, we kind of go by faith because sometimes we don't know when the next gig is, you know, until the phone rings or get an email or whatever. So,
wow.
Obstacles. Yeah. That would probably be the biggest one that I could think of. You know, that and just financial stuff.
Yeah. Cool. Dude, I'm so happy for you, man.
Hey, man. Wow. Glad to be here.
Yeah. Yeah.
Every day. Glad to be here, be alive and be healthy.
Wow. So if you could go back and give advice to the younger Robbie Wyckoff, what would you have said basically don't worry about this small stuff. Don't worry about the money. Don't worry about stuff in general.
Yeah, I would definitely tell him that. And, you know, just to say, you know, don't worry, you're going to be just fine, you know, because I think at the time it was, you know, I knew I wanted to sing, but I thought, you know, that's so unrealistic. You know, who can become a singer, you know, because I wanted to be, you know, at the time wanted to get be the famous guy, but that's everybody wants that. But I would just tell myself, yeah, you're going to be okay, and not to stress out so much about any of the small things in life, and just, you know, don't sweat the small stuff. But and maybe move. I would probably tell them move to LA sooner.
And don't worry about that girl, the beautician.
Yeah, right. You know, I moved out here when I was 21, so
that's pretty young.
It's pretty young.
Yeah, that's pretty young. Yeah, I give you a lot of credit for doing that.
Yeah. You know, I wish I would have learned to play an instrument better. I mean, I play a little tiny bit, but nowhere. I don't play live at all because I'm not that good. So I wish I would have told little Robbie, hey, man, you should really practice that guitar a little bit more.
Do you play a little guitar now?
A little bit, yeah.
But it's hard to hang out with Doug Bossy and even pick up the guitar, man.
Yeah,
okay. To be honest with you, man, it may be frame of reference. Like, you probably may be an adequate player, but, you know, next to that guy, it's like,
yeah, know, I know, it's man. Like, he's brilliant.
The bar is really high with him, man.
He's so great, man.
Hey, speaking of music, if I asked you to pick your top three Desert Island discs in no particular order, and, you know, just for now, like, it can change tomorrow, what would be the three records that come to mind?
Ooh. Boy. I would say Dark Side of the Moon. What's this other one called? You're not going to believe it, but I listen to a lot of classical music, and there's this CD I love called Agnus Dei. I think it's... what is it? It was the composer. I can't think of the composer off the top of my head, but,
what's it called?
Agnus Dei. That's Latin. So good luck trying to spell it.
Yeah.
It's the music of inner harmony or something like that, but it's all choral stuff, like the London Boys Choir or something like that, but just beautiful music, you know, like Ave Maria's on there and stuff like that. And then I would probably take my best of Frank Sinatra, believe it or not.
No, I would believe that. I thought you were gonna, as long as you didn't, I knew, I wouldn't have believed if you said soundtrack to Shrek. That, I mean, that I wouldn't believe. But Frank Sinatra, best of, I believe.
Yeah, there's so many records. I mean, I love, you know, but three albums, those are the ones that come to my top of my head right now.
So what would you say, man, you've been through a lot. What is the most important thing that you've learned about yourself over this whole thing?
Well, I would say that, you know, I've learned that I'm, you know, pretty courageous to pick up and move my little hometown, you know, and come out here to pursue my singing career. I've learned that I'm not a quitter, and I've learned that God has been my co-pilot along every step of the way, that's for sure. I don't know if that quite answers your question, but
no, you know, it's totally, yeah. Whatever the answer is, that's the answer, man.
Yeah.
That's the answer.
Yeah.
Tell me something about yourself people would either be surprised to hear or might find a little odd. You don't seem like an odd guy at all, man. But I know there's got to be some wacky shit.
Oh, wackiness?
Yeah, just odd, you know? There's always... I always like feel like I need to ask the spouses these questions because I never think I'm odd. Totally. And my wife's like, you know, here's a list of weird shit you do that I don't understand after 26 years.
Well, I'm always doing like different voices around at home. My wife cracks up.
That's kind of cool.
Yeah. Because lately, I can't believe it. I do this James T. Kirk impression sometimes.
There you go, man.
But most you can't believe it. But anyways, I do that. She cracks up. So I do funny voices around the house a lot. I'm a pretty silly guy at times, you know, I love to have fun. And, I'd say, you know, I really like people a lot too. And, I get along with people and I'm really easy to get along with.
Yeah. You know? Seem very easy to get along with, man.
Yeah. I mean, I love being around people. I think I'm, you know, pretty compassionate as well. And
you're a very optimistic guy too, I can tell you that.
Yeah, I think it's really important. You've got to be, you know, stay positive, especially what's going on in our world today. There's a lot of dark shit happening, man.
Yeah. I always say life is not for the weak, but you got to be optimistic, man.
Yeah, absolutely. Definitely do. Yeah, I guess that's it.
Person who's had the biggest influence on your life.
That would be my mother. I would say Eileen Wyckoff. She's an amazing woman. She always believed in me from my very first choir concert when I was in first grade. I mean, she supported me along the way the whole time and always believed in me and encouraged me to pursue my singing. And yeah, she was a big supporter. Gosh, I remember her telling me, you know, you're always going to have everything you want someday. And that's one of the reasons why I moved to LA and as well as to pursue my career, not only for myself, but for my mom, because she really believed in me. And she's the one who really lit the fire under my ass to do it and just to make her proud. And so if she were alive today, I think she'd be pretty proud.
Man, you know? I'm pretty confident of that. Yeah, so. For sure. What about your dad? What's the most important thing your dad taught you? I guess your mom, most important thing was to believe in yourself and follow your dreams.
Yeah. Not that my mom ever came out and said, you know, follow your dreams, but she did it in other ways. You know, she would just by the way of encouraging me and just her love and support. Cause she just loved, she knew I could sing. She sang a little bit too. She was in some musical theater. So, but my dad's taught me quite a bit. He wasn't very supportive on the music end of course. He didn't really support me. It's pretty funny. Growing up, he didn't support me until he came to the Roger Waters concert.
I was going to say.
Yeah. But, you know, I learned a lot from my dad. And, you know, my dad didn't have a dad when he grew up. His dad left him. So, you know, there was a period of time where I didn't talk to my dad for about 10 years because I was holding on to a bunch of childhood crap. But I, you know, eventually learned to let it all go and just forgive him for whatever happened. And then we became really close and had a great relationship, you know.
That's good.
But growing up with my dad, he, like I said, he was a big outdoorsman. He taught me the love of the outdoors. He taught me, man, so much about the outdoors and the love of nature. I mean, and that I'm just absolutely so thankful. I mean, we've done some incredible trips when I'm out in the middle of, you know, nature in the remote wilderness and there's nobody around and it's just you. I feel, I can't explain it, but there's such a connection that I feel, and there's nothing else like it, you know? So, yeah, my dad taught me that a lot of, you know, just outdoor skills what else? Gosh, he had a great sense of humor too. So just, we laughed a lot and had a good time. He was a good man.
It's good that you let that shit go too.
Yeah, you have to, you know.
For you. Good for you, you know.
For me, yeah. My sister, on the other hand, couldn't do it, unfortunately. But yeah, it was great, man. We did a lot of great stuff together. It's weird though. He didn't, you know, I don't know what happened. Didn't support the music at all. When I told him I wanted to pursue music, he called it crap, you know, but I just didn't think, he thought it was all luck. He wanted me to join the military and join the Air Force because he was in the Air Force. Mm. And then later was into the Navy reserves. But anyways,
well, good for you for having the courage to follow, you know, to do that, what you did in spite of that, because it's hard to do a lot of times.
Yeah, it is hard. It is hard to do. And I, you know, oh yeah. And the, you know, the first time he really heard, I think the first time he heard me sing, I invited him to the Roger Waters concert at Auburn Hills, in Michigan.
Yeah.
And the, you know, there, he freaked out. I took him backstage and I said, "Welcome to my world." I took him and my stepmother, took him back on stage and showed him everything. And they were like, "Oh my God." I took him up on the stage and stuff. And since that day, he kept telling me how proud he was. And that is so huge, Craig, for him to say how proud he was of me was huge. And for the past, you know, gosh, what was it, 2011 or something, you know, past 8 years, he couldn't stop telling me how proud he is.
Well, I'm glad you guys have experienced that. That must've been a good validation, because you didn't need validation, but it must have been just a good thing to hear from your dad.
Yeah. You know, and he, not only was he proud of me, but he told me, he said, "I'm proud of you and I'm so glad you stuck to your guns."
Ah, that's nice. That's nice. Yeah. So he owned it. He did own it. That's really cool.
Yeah.
That's very, very big of him. That's good, man.
Yeah. It was huge, man. So I was like,
that's really cool. Good for you, man. I'm glad you got to experience that. So what are you proudest of, musically or personally, or both? What, musically and personally, what are you proudest of?
Proud of musically? Gosh, a lot of stuff, man. I'm really proud of a lot of the shows I've sung on, a lot of the animations. I've done a lot of stuff for Disney, from which you mentioned, Phineas and Ferb, to The Replacements, to Emperor's New School. And then most recently, there's been some other animations that have been doing really well. Milo Murphy's Law is another show. Gravity Falls, these are all children's animations. Pen Zero, Pickle and Peanut. So animation world's been great. I'm really proud of those. I'm really proud, of course, of the tour with Roger Waters, which is, like I said, a dream come true and very, very epic. And, you know, and since that tour, it's really, you know, it's helped my career quite a bit, because people, you know, now I'm not just Robbie Wyckoff, but Robbie Wyckoff from the Roger Waters band. You know?
Yeah.
That tends to help a little bit, you know. But yeah, musically, I, you know, it's pretty surreal. Like, you know, I've been working with Rick Springfield quite a bit lately and recording. I've recorded on his last two or three albums, and, you know, he calls me all the time, man. So it's like,
that's awesome.
I'll be driving.
You know, George played for him for the longest time, right?
Oh, yeah. That's how I got.
Is that how you got the gig?
You know, Matt Bissonette.
I know of him. I know who he is. Yeah. I don't know him, but that's so okay.
Yeah, George Bernhard played in the band for a while. Well, Matt Bissonette used to play bass, so Matt referred me to sing some backgrounds, and then that was like 8 years ago, man. So I've been working with Rick quite a bit. So all that set, you know, just to say that, you know, it's so surreal sometimes, because I'll be driving down PCH in Malibu going, wow, I'm on my way to Rick Springfield's house to record with Rick. And it's like, when I was in my first band, we were doing, you know, covering his song. So it's just like, so I'm proud of that. I'm just proud of a lot of accomplishments I've made musically. And then, you know, personally as well. I mean, music's been great to me. I'm, you know, I've got my own house in Southern California. Who would have thought? You know, I'm married. I got a beautiful wife. I'm just a lot of, life is beautiful, man. It's all really good. And I'm very, very grateful. That's,
man,
for sure.
It's so, your vibe is so genuine. It's so nice to hear that. And I'm saying that from with no judgment, just like, you know, almost like your wonderment or your enthusiasm of, wow, I can't believe, you know, you're still got that enthusiasm, even though, you know, like, you know, you've proven yourself, you don't need it. It's so cool to hear that. you know, that then it's really nice to your gratitude is what it is. You know, it's really nice.
Oh, totally, man. It's, yeah. It happens to me all the time. I was just being like, wow, check it out, man. I get to, you know, like I've been playing these local gigs with David Garfield and it's like, I turn around, I got Steve Ferroni on the drums, you know, and I'm Freddie Washington on bass, David Garfield, you know, all these, and I'm surrounded by such a great network of world-class musicians out here and I've become really good friends and just super grateful, man. It's the best move I ever did, man. It's just, you know, and it's so important too, just to say that, you know, I think it's important for everybody to really love what you do for a living. And like, that's why I'm so grateful and very fortunate because I love what I do. It never seems like work. You know?
That's awesome.
Beautiful thing, man.
Man, I'm going to ask you just one more question because I have all these questions. You answered so many of them in sharing all your stuff, man. And I cannot thank you enough. I'm so glad we got to connect, but I really thank you for sharing all your stories because it's been very inspirational. I think people are going to get a lot out of this. And thanks for being just a cool guy that you are, man.
Oh, man. Of course. And that's thank you so much for having me on your show. I really appreciate it, especially being the first singer.
Yeah, either. Man. Now the bar is set. It's high, man. You got Ravi Wyckoff.
Whatever I can do to help other people too. You know, I'm always encouraging people, you know, because, you know, people have dreams and, you know, I just encourage them to never give up and just go for it, man.
Yeah, 100%. Well, I have this thing on my wall and I've talked about this a few times. It says there's only three reasons you will not be successful. Number one, you don't try new things. Number two, you don't learn from what you try. And number three, you give up. And clearly number three is the one that is the toughest, you know, but you know, that's the reality. You just cannot, you know, you got to keep going, whatever it takes. And you know, it's going to hit, you know? So my last question is, what has been the biggest change in your personality over the last 10 years and how much of this change, Robbie, has been deliberate and intentional and how much is just a natural part of aging?
Ooh, hold on now. That's a deep question.
Yeah, this isn't the fish on the wall show for sure.
Well, I mean, you know, I'm more positive than I've ever been. I mean, I think the outlook, you know, what's coming down the pike is pretty cool, especially since I want to start getting into the voiceover work as well. I'm real excited about that. You know, I think personality-wise, I think I'm just becoming even more. And I've always been a compassionate person, but I think I'm even becoming more compassionate and more caring for other people because I really love to see other people succeed and love to help other people. And then I'm probably becoming more of a wacko as well. It's a humor. I've become pretty silly, you know, as I get older too, you know.
It's better than becoming like a curmudgeon, you know, which a lot of people, no, I, you know, some people just, you know, I've talked to some people and they say, I've gotten more bitter or I've gotten more, I've gotten more, you know, less tolerant.
Damn, really? Yeah, that's not good. You don't want to be, you want to go there, man. That's for sure. I think just kind of it's more of a natural part of just, it's probably part of it's aging, just getting older. You know, I'm 53 now and, you know, the older I get to, it's, you know, the more I want to see, like I said, other people succeed and help other people along the way. I don't know if that answers your question or not, but
no, it is what it is. It's a good answer.
I'm just excited about the future. I'm excited about what's coming, you know, I mean. You know, I mean, who knows what's next? You know, I mean, I just got a call from, that's the thing about this business, man. I mean, you just never know what the next phone call is going to bring. I mean, when I got the call from to audition for Roger, I was like, what? Like stuff comes out of nowhere sometimes. Like I mentioned, Kenny Olson, my friend, he called me up yesterday and said, man, I got this cool project. You know, these guys from, I can't remember a bunch of name guys from, some guys from Jane's Addiction and some other popular bands want to do like a Pink Floyd cover thing and they want me to sing. And I'm like, cool, man. I'm like, I get to work with all these amazing musicians. So
awesome.
I'm just real excited about what's yet to come. And I don't ever want to stop. Just want to keep doing it. I, you know, I think about retirement, but then I'm like, well, I don't want to retire. I'm never going to retire. I mean, I've looked at guys like Tony Bennett, man. He's 90 years old, still doing it. And
he's in great shape. And
Roger Waters. Greg Shapes, Steven Tyler, all these cats are still doing it. Daltrey, I mean, why? You know, I mean, it's I just love what I do. So,
man, you know, I can't.
I'm very blessed. Very, very blessed.
You are. And I want to thank you again. And I want to tell people how to find, I want to say two things. First, check out Robbie Wyckoff. It's Robbie, R-O-B-B-I-E, Wyckoff, W-Y-C-K-O-F-F. And let me tell you where you can find him. First of all, anybody listening to this, if you want a guy, if you're looking for a great vocalist, and I've heard him sing, so I'm not saying this because he's been on the show. I saw him at Pablo Cruz. He's a really great singer, a good performer, knows how to work with the audience. But if you're looking for a guy for live gigs, if you're looking for someone to do tracks, if you're looking for someone to do studio work, he's got a great home studio, or voiceover work, get a hold of Robbie. You can go to his website, robbiewyckoff.com. Again, it's R-O-B-B-I-E-W-Y-C-K-O-F-F, and fill out the contact form there. And you'll have a super pro on your team. He's got a couple of records that you could check out on both iTunes and one of them on Spotify, I believe. It's his first record is Stepping Out. It's a big band record, which licensing. You licensed that music as well?
We're still in the process of licensing some of the music, but there has been one song that got licensed.
Great. And then Lose Control, which he's last thing he is Out of Control, but Lose Control is his pop rock record, and that's on iTunes. And the second thing is, man, happy anniversary again.
Thanks very much. I appreciate it.
To you and your wife. And man, it's been a real pleasure talking to you. I really appreciate your time, and thanks for everything, man. Correct. Some real engaging stories, man. Thank you.
Thank you for having me on the show. I really appreciate it. And especially to be the first singer.
Yeah, you're welcome, man. It's my pleasure. Honestly, I mean that. Everybody, cool. Thank you so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed this interview as much as I did. Support Robbie Wyckoff. Check him out online. Go see his shows with Pablo Cruz. They're touring all the time. Go to pablocruz.com. If you don't know who Pablo Cruz is, that means you're probably a baby boomer and we'll forgive you. But you should still go see Pablo Cruz because they're a good band, man. And thanks again to Robbie Wyckoff for spending time with us. I certainly appreciate it. Go to everyonelovesguitar.com. Sign up to get on our newsletter list right now, and some other cool stuff there. And most important, remember that happiness is a choice, so choose wisely. Be nice, go play your guitar, and have some fun. Till next time, peace and love, y'all. I'm out. I hope you enjoyed this episode of Everyone Loves Guitar. If you did, make sure you go to everyonelovesguitar.com/subscribe and subscribe to the audio podcast and to our very active YouTube community. And if you have any comments, please write me at everyonelovesguitar.com/hello. We'll see you on the next episode. Until then, make sure you choose happiness, relax, and have as much fun as possible.